Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Happy Thursday, friends. Beautiful day to be outside. Okay, a little bit cloudy, but some nice warm weather we're having. And Chris Tubbs at the helm with me today as David has the day off. So hi, Chris, and welcome to the show.
I am glad to be here, Jor. First time, long time.
Yes, it's been a while, so happy to have you along for the ride.
Happy to be.
David Josephson is off today. He is our regular producer for the Paul and Jordana Show, and he came to visit me this morning. He is off because his wife, who is training to be a nurse, thank God we need nurses, and Katrina is amazing. She had clinicals today, and she's working like a 12-hour day in a rural hospital, so he needed to do some daddy daycare and some daddy time. So he did, and he and the girls, Winter and Kate, came to visit me today, and they brought me Christmas cookies, which, by the way, are delicious. I know we have donuts and latkes this holiday season for the Jews, but those Christmas cookies, woo, friends, you got the lock on the Christmas cookies. Those are good. So they brought me a few of those. Maybe there'll even be some left after the show, because now that the kids are home, they might be gone. And I got to see the girls, and it was so fun. And I gave them some Hanukkah presents, and we played dreidel together, and it was such a blast. So fun to do a little Christmas time and a little Hanukkah time with David and the girls today. So thank you for visiting, David. I appreciate it. And Chris, I'm saying things like dreidel and latke, and Chris Tubbs is going to be getting a Hanukkah quiz coming up at 4:35. We have lots packed into the show today and lots of serious stuff, but we are going to have some fun. So Chris, who has not been working with me all week, and I'm not going to tell him what night of Hanukkah it is, because that's one of the questions, but Chris is going to be taking a Hanukkah quiz. So test your knowledge also today with me at 4:30. But of course, we have some serious news coming up in the show right at 4:20. We're going to speak with Georgia Fort, who has been following the Kim Potter trial. Once again, jury selection continues. We're going to talk with her and about some stuff mainstream media is not covering about that trial. She is intricately involved in that. And at 3:30, we're also going to talk with Professor David Schultz. Yes, we are going to wade into this debate about the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments about possibly overturning Roe v. Wade and a 1992 Planned Parenthood versus Casey ruling. So yes, we're not going to debate abortion, but we are going to talk about what the Supreme Court is debating, why they are debating it now, what the possible repercussions of this could be. So yes, some serious stuff, but also a lot of fun. Find out who's quitting their jobs at record times and which states are leading in that as well. But I would be remiss if we did not start with the fact that Omicron has been found in Minnesota. And by the way, Paul Douglas and I were debating this morning, because I went on the morning show with him today, whether it's Omicron or Omicron. I'm going to go hard and defend that it's Omicron, because when I was pledging AEFI, which was my sorority at Syracuse University, we had to learn the Greek alphabet, and I still remember it to this day. And we said Omicron. Omicron, Pi, Rho, Sigma, Tau, Epsilon, Phi, Chi, Psi, Omega. Let me hear you say go AEFI. That's the end of the Greek alphabet. And I could be wrong. And if I am, I guarantee somebody there in the audience will tell me. But I'm gonna go with Omicron for now, until, I don't know, Fauci or Dr. Osterholm or Dr. Hilden or Dr. Poland from the Mayo, somebody corrects me. So for now, we're saying Omicron until I am proven wrong. We listened today to the Minnesota Department of Health update. We heard from Jan Malcolm. So here she is on the confirmation that Omicron is now in Minnesota.
It was just yesterday on our media call that we talked about the Omicron variant and the work that we were doing here in Minnesota to monitor for it. While this is not an unexpected development, I don't think anybody thought we'd be back here quite this soon. Earlier today, we announced that our public health laboratory has indeed found the variant of the SARS-CoV-2 virus known as Omicron in a specimen from a Minnesota resident. This resident reported to us that they had a recent travel history to New York City. The variant was found through our Minnesota Department of Health Variant Surveillance Program, which, as you may know and we are very proud of, is a very strong surveillance program, one of the strongest in the nation. And having this robust virus surveillance system allowed us to quickly identify Omicron once it was in our state, and, you know, frankly made it more likely that we would be among the first states to find the variant. It's important that we share this news with you as soon as we have it, and indeed it is literally hours old. The detection of the Omicron variant in Minnesota certainly can feel concerning, and we understand that. With every new variant, and we've had several of them, there are quite logical questions and wonders about what this means.
So what does this mean? You heard the governor say the reason we have found Omicron so quickly, and by the way, did you guys hear how Jan Malcolm was saying Omicron? She was saying it Omicron. We're going to stick with that. By the way, the governor just said it's because we have great testing. We have great means of testing. We are vigilant here in Minnesota. It is probably in other states, but we are good with testing, and that's why we have found it early, or that's why we have found it now. It's not great to be second, but here we are. We have found it. We've identified it. Again, it has resolved in the person that it was identified in with very minimal repercussions. I believe it was a mild case. And the messaging here, and we'll play more from Jan Malcolm in the next hour, but the messaging here that has been from the president, from the governor, from Jan Malcolm, we've heard it from doctors, is get your vaccine, get your booster, wear your mask. That's what we can do to stay safe. We cannot prevent, Omicron is here. We can't stop it. But what we can do to keep each individual safe are to take those precautions. Vaccines, boosters, masks, wash your hands, the basic stuff. I wish you all to be safe. I hope you are all taking precautions. I certainly know I am as an immunocompromised person. The more we all take those precautions, the more safe we all are. So I promise much more on Omicron, the very latest of it being found in Minnesota. But let's take a break. Joining me next, Georgia Fort, independent journalist on the very latest on the Kim Potter trial. Here's what we know. 11 total jurors have been selected. 6 women, 5 men. 3 more are needed. 17 potential jurors have been dismissed. The state has used its last peremptory strike. The defense has used 3. We do know that Kimberly Potter, former Brooklyn Center police officer, accused in the killing of Dante Wright, will take the stand in her own defense. Independent journalist Georgia Fort has been following this from the very beginning. She is joining us now with some insights that you won't hear in other media outlets. I'm so happy to have you back on the show, Georgia. Thank you for joining us.
Jordana, thanks so much for having me.
Now, I've been following you on Instagram, and I encourage everybody to follow Georgia on Instagram at @ByGeorgiaFort is her Instagram handle, and those are most of her social medias. You have been just intimately involved in covering this case from the very beginning. You were there when a driver plowed through a bunch of protesters out front. I want to get to that. But when it comes to things like jury selection and the nuts and bolts of the case, what do we need to know today? What is the very latest?
Well, Jordana, I was one of 2 journalists in the courtroom on that first day of jury selection. And, you know, it was pretty intense. There were moments actually where I, as a journalist, you know, turned and looked at even the AG and other individuals in the courtroom, asking myself, did I just see that happen? Specifically, when you think about the defense attorney, Earl Gray, using the last names of 2 of those 11 jurors who have been selected. And so we know that the judge is now reviewing, at least in one case, where other information was put out about that juror, what band he's in, what position in that band he holds. So it's very easy to track down his identity, which mm-hmm. could be concerning for his safety serving on this jury for this case.
So let's just give a little backstory for the people that aren't following as closely. Earl Gray, the defense attorney, did use the last name of, did you say two jurors now? I read just one, but were there two jurors?
Yep, on that first day, there were two jurors okay. who he mistakenly identified by their last name when he stood up at the podium to start questioning them. One of them, you know, kind of was water under the bridge. Nobody, I think, really noticed it. But on the other mm-hmm. juror, not only did he address him by his last name, but mm-hmm. he went on to ask him where he worked, what kind of position he had. We learned that the gentleman was also in a band. He asked him what mm-hmm. the name of his band was and what position he played. And so anybody who has access to the internet could go Google that rock band and look at what the name of the person is who holds that position in the band. So very, and we've already heard reports that people have, you know, exposed him online.
Yes,
he doesn't have now that privilege of his privacy. But the reason why that was concerning as a reporter is because when it initially happened, the judge didn't address it in real time, despite making the ruling that they were going to protect the identities of these jurors in this trial.
Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding that Judge Regina Chiu decided that that juror will remain on the case.
Well, they did an off-camera briefing about it, and so this happened actually today that they had this off-camera briefing, and so we will learn this afternoon okay. what happened in that off-camera briefing, because there's a different court reporter in the courtroom today. Every day they're rotating in two new jurors. So mm-hmm. I was in the courtroom on the first day of jury selection. I'll be back in the courtroom on December 15th. But in between, there's other jurors and we all mm-hmm. share notes. So we'll have more of an understanding of what was determined during that off-camera briefing later this afternoon once today's reporter sends out their notes.
Yeah, and just so you know, the juror who was identified by defense attorney Earl Gray says he's been bombarded. He says his phone is blowing up. He's been bombarded by the media. He has been getting a lot of calls. And I imagine, George, and you would probably know more about this. I mean, the problem here is that he could feel compromised. He could get information from outside people. He could also be threatened.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a number of different concerns to a juror having identity. And I think that's part of the reason why going into this, especially knowing that this is a high profile case, that's mm-hmm. why the judge made the decision to keep their identities anonymous. And so, right. you know, if they don't address it, Jordana, what could be concerning down the road is, let's say that they decide to allow this individual to continue serving. Well, if someone bribes him or threatens him, down the road, that could be used as a mistrial. And so I think the court should be really mindful of how they utilize their resources, because we'd hate to be 4 weeks into this trial, and because that individual's identity has been compromised, then that is now used as a mistrial.
Exactly. Something else I wanted to discuss that we haven't heard enough about, and I believe that you were there, Georgia, when protesters were out in front of the courthouse. There was a vehicle that drove through this protest, and it's my understanding that nobody was hurt, but can you explain that scene? It seemed very chaotic. What happened, and when did this happen?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was quite shocking. I was just in the courtroom. I was headed down. I was on the elevator, in fact, with Dante Wright's mother and father, asking them how did they feel like the day's proceedings went. They told me that it was very nerve-wracking for them. I exit the elevator, and I'm engaged in this conversation, someone asking about details that, you know, since they learned Kimberly Potter was going to be testifying. And then all of a sudden, you know, you hear all of this screaming. A man drove past the barricade right in front of the courthouse just as court was wrapping up for the day, despite there being dozens of protesters standing in the street. And you know, it has been very difficult to report on that because so many of those protesters out there have expressed to me now the trauma that they experience and how they feel almost like they have PTSD every time a car drives by. They're startled. Yeah. But Minneapolis police, the MP has said that they're not going to look into that driver despite protesters turning in the license plate number for that driver. And I think that this sends, you know, some very mixed messaging just weeks after the not guilty Rittenhouse verdict about the counterattack on protesters and, you know, that there won't be consequences when individuals attack protesters. Those individuals have their First Amendment right to be out there protesting. And so it's a little concerning that MPD is taking that position on this case, especially
were laws broken.
Everything we've been through over the last year.
Right. Right. And I know you're not a lawyer necessarily, but there were barricades up. I mean, isn't it illegal to drive through a planned protest?
Well, and so the comments we heard from MPD were that this wasn't a permitted protest. But some say, well, you know, does a lack of a permit violence, you know? And so where's the protection for the public who is gathering and does have the constitutional right to gather? There were barricades that were put up by marshals. Oftentimes at these protests, you see a number of volunteers who will stand on the perimeter of these protests to try to mitigate some of these attacks from happening. In this case, there was a total disregard for that perimeter that had been set up for volunteers. And so while this protest did not have a permit from the city to happen, one could also argue when you look at the laws that driving past a barricade and into a group of people, whether they're supposed to be there or not, is reckless driving. And there were children there. So that's endangerment of children.
I saw the video on your social media and on Instagram by Georgia Fort, by the way. Everybody should look at it. It's very troubling and very troubling. I'm glad we got a chance to talk a little bit about it. And before I know we're going to be out of time soon, but you have access, obviously, to the Wright family. You see them in court. You get a chance to talk with them. You mentioned, of course, that this is very stressful for them. What else is happening with them? What are they experiencing right now? What have you learned from them?
Well, you know, this is a very emotional time, and they are very uncertain whether or not they're going to see the outcome in this case that they're hoping for. But they've been very clear from day one that even if Potter is found guilty, they do not feel like that is true justice. They feel like that's accountability. But Katie Wright has expressed publicly several times that true justice would be this never happening in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel that. You are back in court on December 15th as the pool reporter. Is that right, Georgia?
That's correct.
Okay. We will check back in with you again. We will be following this case, but we are grateful for your reporting. We are grateful for the investigating, for the never giving up. And I know we can find you on Instagram at @ByGeorgiaFort. Where else can people find your stories?
Yeah, you can head over to my website, GeorgiaFort.com.
GeorgiaFort.com. Thank you again for the reporting, and thank you for sharing your knowledge on the show with us today.
Thank you so much, Jordana. Take care.
You got it. I encourage you to follow Georgia. Her independent reporting and independent journalism, she's self-funded. The stuff is amazing. I feel like she's everywhere. So she's doing it all. So for other perspective, outside perspective, that's not just mainstream media, follow Georgia on all of her social media and GeorgiaFort.com. When we get back, what is happening with the Supreme Court? Hear what Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, and we will talk with Professor David Schultz about the challenge to Roe v. Wade next.
The right of a woman to choose, the right of to control her own body, has been clearly set for since Casey, and never challenged. You want us to reject that line of viability and adopt something different. 15 justices over 50 years have, or I should say 30 since Casey, have reaffirmed that basic viability line. Four have said no, two of them members of this court, but 15 justices have said yes, of varying political backgrounds. Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
That was Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. In her comments after yesterday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the most significant abortion case in, well, 50 years since Roe, as she mentioned, 36 years since Planned Parenthood versus Casey. What's happening is the Mississippi's Republican-led state legislature passed a law banning most abortions after 15 weeks. But the state's only abortion clinic, there's only one in Mississippi, Jackson Women's Health Organization, sued. The lower courts have blocked the ban, saying it's unconstitutional. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments on this. It's a little confusing, and it has serious consequences. So joining us now to lay this plain, to explain this for all of us who are concerned yet a little confused about what's happening, I count myself among them, is joining us is Professor David Schultz from Hamline University, a constitutional law professor and our expert on all these matters. Professor Schultz, I'm so glad you came back on the show. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, Jordana.
Explain to us why this is happening now.
Okay, so first, let's just get clear. What Roe and Casey established is that women have, under the U.S. Constitution, a constitutional right to terminate a pregnancy up to the point of viability, which is approximately 24, 25 weeks. Okay, and that, as you heard with the Sotomayor comment, has been reaffirmed consistently throughout time. However, there have been many individuals, including, I'm trying not to be partisan here, many Republicans who've wanted to overturn Roe and don't believe or support a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy. With a strategy for many years of trying to appoint justices to the Supreme Court who do not support Roe, we now are at a point where there are six justices on the court who have expressed concerns and have said they either don't support Roe versus Wade, support reversing it, or support in some way, shape, or form restricting women's rights to terminate a pregnancy. Having sensed that, Mississippi passed a law, I can't remember if it was earlier this year or last year, I think it might have been earlier this year, that challenges the central holding of Roe and says that women may not terminate a pregnancy beyond the 15th week of pregnancy except in narrow circumstances. So they're taking advantage, that is, Mississippi is taking advantage of what they think is a political moment right now on the court where they think they have, and they might have, six votes to overturn Roe and to scale back significantly reproductive rights for women.
Okay, and they have every right to do that. This is within the limits of the law, correct? As political or biased or opportunistic as it can be, it's still legal.
It's legal to do so in terms of passing a law to do that, to challenge it. At this point, the lower courts are correct that under the current interpretation of the Constitution established by the Supreme Court, the Mississippi law ought to be unconstitutional.
Okay, so then why are the lower courts ruling not standing? Why is this going to the Supreme Court?
Because at this point, they have ruled against Mississippi. At this point, it's going to the Supreme Court because the court has accepted the case, which means at least four justices said they want to hear this case, with the presumption being that they are probably going to, as we saw in the oral arguments yesterday, uphold the Mississippi law, and then in the process maybe go even further and basically say that the U.S. Constitution no longer protects a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy. Generally, when the Supreme Court takes a lower court case, it is because what? It disagrees with the decision.
I see. Okay, so they're disagreeing with the lower courts of Mississippi. Okay, all right. Now, it's my understanding that a decision on from the Supreme Court could be expected in June of this Correct. Year. Is that right?
Next year.
I'm sorry. Yes, I meant this coming June. You're right. Sorry. Got to get my years together.
It could be as soon as a few weeks. More likely, a case like this will come out in June at the end of their circuit year. Yeah. So let's say what's it like 7 months from now? Roughly 7 months from now.
Correct. Now, let's say the Supreme Court does uphold the Mississippi ban. What are the repercussions of that for other states and abortion in general?
Okay. Assuming it upholds the Mississippi law, two things could happen. One, it could say it upholds the Mississippi law, which then probably frees up other states to want to pass laws that also restrict women's right to terminate a pregnancy well below 24 weeks. If it goes mm-hmm. further, as some people are suspecting, it might just strike down Roe versus Wade and basically say it's up to the individual states to decide what they want to do on abortion rights. Now, in approximately 24 or so states in the United States, including in Minnesota, there is either law, a state Supreme Court opinion, or a constitutional language under its state constitution that protect abortion rights. In Minnesota, there would be, even if the Mississippi law is upheld, there would be no immediate impact in the state because our state Supreme Court has held that our state constitution protects a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy. However, without a federal right there, it'd be possible what? If a state legislature is elected with a governor who opposes abortion rights, maybe they push a constitutional amendment. Maybe eventually the state Supreme Court could overturn it. But short term, no impact here in terms of legally, but longer term, there could be an impact in the state of Minnesota.
So ultimately, the Supreme Court could just give control to the states, and then in each state, it could be challenged and therefore possibly overturned, depending on who has political power.
Exactly. So we could come up with a patchwork quilt of different states across the country protecting or not protecting reproductive rights, depending on what they want to do. So you could have some states that say their law is still the same as Roe, some that would ban abortion, some that would be in between. So it would be, that's why I want to use kind of like a quilt pattern or jigsaw puzzle picture in terms of it. Now, what this means is a couple of things. One, depending on what state you live in, and if you're female, your right to do what you want, the right to do with your body is going to depend on the state in which you live, and whether or not you can terminate a pregnancy depends on that. I think also what's going to happen, assuming this decision comes out in June, it's going to be what? Within what, 4 months or 5 months of the 22 midterm elections, this is certainly going to be a major, major issue in the November 2022 midterm and statewide elections across the country.
And you heard Justice Sotomayor talking at the beginning. We bumped in with her soundbite that's saying she's not sure this body can withstand the political stench of this decision. Does she mean the body of the Supreme Court? And what does she mean by political stench? And what kind of stain could this case put on the Supreme Court?
A couple things. First, what she's referring to is the fact that we really have at this point nearly 50 years of the Supreme Court consistently reaffirming the right of women to basically control their reproductive life. And about three quarters of the American public supports reproductive rights. Now, whether Roe was right or not is a different story entirely. We can have a great debate, but generally, the Supreme Court is, once it has decided a case, it's supposed to reaffirm and basically say, we defer to precedent, we defer to what we've done before. Here, given the fact that there's been a political mobilization to try to overturn Roe, what Sotomayor is referring to is that what? This may simply look like what? A political decision where the vote lines up what? With six Republican appointed voting to restrict abortion rights, three Democratic-appointed justices affirming abortion reproductive rights. That looks an awful lot like what? A political decision, or to use that phrase, legislating from the bench. And we already know this year, public opinion regarding the Supreme Court is taking a hit because the public thinks the justices now are looking like what? Politicians with robes. She's worried about the damage that this does to the credibility, the legitimacy, the neutrality of the Supreme Court. And to some extent, she may be correct, because I think it will look like a political decision.
I don't blame her. I would be worried about the very same thing. This is a fascinating debate. All of those of us who believe that women should be in control of our own bodies and have our own rights to what we do with our bodies, whether that get an abortion or get a vaccine or whatever, we should have our own rights and autonomy over our bodies. We'll be watching this very, very closely. Professor David Schultz, thank you for the explainer. Thanks for answering my questions. I hope you'll come back on the show and continue to educate us.
I will. My pleasure, Jordana. Thank you.
Thank you so much. There you go, Professor David Schultz. He has this great way of explaining it, even to folks like me, laying it all plain. This is a big one, folks. We will be watching it. Quick break for traffic and weather. And when we get back, who is quitting their jobs the most in which states? Find out next. Okay, we've tackled some pretty heavy stuff already. The Kim Potter trial. We tackled the Supreme Court debate on abortion. We talked about Omicron being in Minnesota. So I figured, you know what? We need to lighten things up a little bit. There's a lot of news. We got to get to all of that stuff. But we also have to have a little fun. America is becoming a nation of quitters. And I mean that in the best possible way. 4.4 million workers have handed in their resignations. And that was just in September. Yeah, that was just in 1 month. But the trend isn't spreading evenly across the country. Some states having sharp increases in people resigning and handing in their pink slips. Others are staying in place. Like here in Minnesota, we are not having a great resignation. Some people are. Some caused, COVID caused some people to rethink their careers, maybe their lives, maybe start that business or change careers. And hopefully they have navigated that in a smooth fashion or gainfully employed. But the top 10 states by quit rate in September, number 10 is New Hampshire. 3.8% of workers quit in New Hampshire. That's a lot of the workforce. New Hampshire, Louisiana, and Oregon are all 10, 9, and 8, about 3.8 to 3.9. I don't know what's going on there, but they're good. They're quitting. Idaho, 4.1% of the workforce quit in September. Indiana, Colorado, and Alaska are all next with 4.3%. Indiana, Colorado, and Alaska. Then Nevada at 4.5%. Montana at 4.8%. And get this. All right, Chris, I'm going to give you a quiz. Pop quiz.
Okay.
Which state do you think has the most people resigning, at least in September?
Say maybe West Coast, maybe California.
Okay, good guess. Populous state, excellent guess, mm-hmm. But you're wrong.
Oh, man.
I think you'll be surprised to find out that it's Hawaii. Hawaii.
Ah.
I know.
Melakalikimaka.
Right? I was shocked to learn that. And there is no data on why they're all quitting, but who knows?
Gotta maybe go to the beach, just, bruh.
Right? I guess they just want to have some more chill time. Hawaii, 7.1% of the workforce quit in September. And good on them. When we get back, more of the latest on Omicron next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.